Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odds. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
As Paul Perillo might say, welcome inside the playbook.
I thought that's what you might say.
Oh, is that what I said? Okay. I can't even keep track of it.
What the greatest moments in Patriots playbook history says.
We have great moments? We do? Shock and surprise. Welcome inside the playbook. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. Program today. We hope at some point in time we're going to get in touch with CBS's Dan Dierdorf.
2:30.
Thank you very much. Well, then I guess that means we'll both get a chance to talk with Dan. He will be a part of the broadcast crew with Greg Gumbel, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For the Buffalo-New England game this Sunday.
So we'll get their number two crew, I believe.
I think they are considered the number two crew. You know, I realize that, you know, there's so much emphasis put on, well, who's number one, who's number two, who's the last crew.
Yeah.
Fact is that it's a network broadcast crew. I would love to be the last broadcast crew for CBS or Fox.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't, you know, because it's a good paycheck to come along with it. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, Dan will join us at 2:30. And then, of course, ESPN's Russell Baxter will join us at the top of the 3 o'clock hour today as we run through, what week is this now? Week 14? Week 15.
15.
Yeah, thank you. 15, 16, 17. Yeah,
right.
3 weeks
three
to go.
3 games left.
3 weeks to go. So we will get to that. If you have some questions for Russell, we don't do this all that often, but if you have some things that you'd like to ask Russell, fire them off at webradio@patriots.com. We'll do that. We'll see if we can feed him a few of those as well. I'll tell you that, of course, the next couple of Thursdays we won't be here. Simply because next Thursday is Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. The following Thursday is New Year's Eve. So, Russell, we're going to try to get him to move to Wednesday, depending on his schedule. So it'll be a little different schedule over the next couple of weeks just because of the holidays coming about. But if you want to do that, you can do that as well. We'll go from there. Now, I mentioned just a little while ago, Eric, that you know the whole Chris Henry story is a little bit disturbing to me. And I realize here's a guy that, in case for some reason you haven't heard, Chris Henry passed away earlier this morning, apparently due from injuries he sustained falling out of the back of a truck. And I guess some of the details of what happened are still a little bit sketchy, but you probably caught up to date on it on the internet or seen it on ESPN or what have you. It's disappointing because here's a guy who clearly, when he came out of West Virginia, was a very immature young man. Took a while, some suspensions, in fact, some misbehaving. Took him a while to kind of get his life in gear, and it looked like he was finally beginning to get that accomplished. And you know, he was just growing up. And then to have something like this happen, it's really kind of shocking. I was just telling you, Eric, that when I was still doing Boston College football, I remember him very well playing wide receiver for West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And we all thought at the time that that guy has stardom in his future as long as his head is screwed on tightly to his neck. And, of course, you know what I mean by that particular analogy. He was basically a screw-loose kind of guy. He's a little wild-haired, just young, just immature. Mm-hmm. That really is the best way you could describe Chris Henry. And
certainly had his troubles in the beginning of his NFL career.
He absolutely did, and admittedly so. And I think that, you know, the Bengals did everything that they could possibly to get him. They gave him, what, second, third chances, you know. And obviously, it's just anytime someone's cut down in their prime like that, when clearly they have a lot to give, it's disappointing. It's tragic. It's tragic for his fiancée. It's tragic for his children. It's tragic for his family. It's tragic.
Well, and you think of yourself at that age.
Yeah.
And just think of how much life you've lived since you were 26.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about this guy's life ending at 26.
Right.
And it's kind of unfathomable when you think about how much he had already done in such a short time, but how much more, like you said, could have done. And, you know, you just think back to when you were that age and, you know, could you imagine it all being over at that point?
No, I can't imagine it. I really can't. Yeah, it says here that it was, you know, his death comes one day after falling out of the back of a pickup truck in the Charlotte, North Carolina area during what police have said was a domestic dispute with his fiance.
And he had been on, he was in Charlotte because he'd been on IR, correct?
I believe that is correct, yes.
So
I believe that is
his season with the Bengals was over.
Yeah, yeah. He was like, I think he had like 15, 16, 17 catches or somewhere around in there because I hadn't looked at his stats, and I know he had been on injured, I think, yeah, injured reserve. Yeah, he broke his forearm. That's what it was back in earlier in November, broke his arm. So that's why he was on injured reserve. He had had surgery on that forearm mm-hmm. as well. So that was part of the reason why he was even there. The other part of this story, however, is what I dealt with, you know, the guys just before we came on the air here. And this is sort of a larger question that I'd really like to ask our listeners today. It has to do with the spreading of this news and what you believe and what you don't believe. Because, as I said, Jerry Fraley, who is a columnist, writer for the Dallas Morning News, was alleged, and it was a Twitter account that was attributed to him. I mean, you if you clicked on Jerry Fraley or whatever the account number name was, it connected you right to the Dallas Morning News and his, you know, backlog of columns. So somebody did a pretty good job with this, but they, for some reason, it was 12 hours before the guy died, before Chris Henry died. He was reporting that, getting it from my sources, that Chris Henry has passed away.
It's bizarre.
And, you know, he said, very sad, you know, more details to come, blah, blah, blah. And so obviously you're thinking, whoa, that's pretty heavy. Of course, it's 12 hours. I mean, he was still on, you know, life support at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing led to another, and these tweets kept happening. And then obviously the Dallas Morning News, the story came out that this was not his Twitter account, and Chris had not yet passed away. And so then the Dallas Morning News is getting slammed, you know, and Jerry Fraley's getting slammed for having the audacity, you know, to, you know, say such things about a guy like Chris Henry when it wasn't him to begin with, nor did the Morning News have anything to do with it. So the bigger picture here is this is why I ultimately believe, because there's just not a fail-safe way to get these things done here when you can basically sign up as anybody as long as a name isn't taken.
Yeah, it's troubling.
Twitter, this whole social networking business here, and believe me, as I've said before, I have a Twitter account, I have a Facebook page, you know, it's fine. I decided to be proactive about it, to be quite honest with you. Do I really have the time to tweet once a day? No. Do I have the time really to update my Facebook page once a day? No, I don't. I'm a bit too busy doing other things. But I try to do it because I know that there are people who are interested in what's going on, and we have Patriots fans, and, you know, and I have family and all this kind of stuff that, you know, want to know what's going on, and, you know, obviously all of our very busy lives. I know that's why you have a Facebook page. We're friends, aren't we?
We are.
Facebook? Okay.
Yes, we are.
So, see, there you go. But
on and off. on and off Facebook, I mean,
yes,
not on and off friends.
Right, exactly. I understood that. Maybe somebody else did, but I understood that. But here's the problem. The whole problem with social networking is that anybody can almost now, and I know they're trying to put fail-proof, mm-hmm. fail-safe, you know, gadgets or whatever in there to keep
like verification.
People. Yes. Mm. It's still, things are going to fall through the cracks, and this is a perfect example of
yep.
that. And it's a little scary that someone could go out there and mimic you
yep.
or I and sign up as you or I or anybody else that's out there and put out damaging material that not only damaged the Bengals and Chris Henry and his family, but attributed as such. And then, of course, you're left doing nothing but scrambling, trying to basically cover up for what obviously is a mistake. And we see it happen maybe once a month.
Yeah.
At least once a month where somebody in the media is scrambling saying, hey, that's not my Twitter account.
Not just people in the media, but athletes themselves have
athletes especially have done
victim to that.
Which is why you're seeing now more and more teams telling their athletes, don't mess with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the NFL, and I have to admit, when this first started this year, I thought the NFL was, you know, capital, you know, no fun league this year for telling players you can't tweet.
On the sideline, I can
understand why they would want him to do on the sideline because that could get out of hand. You could see that getting out of hand. But telling them to stay away from it, no mobile Facebook things, all that kind of stuff. And I thought, oh, geez, that's kind of a killjoy. But now the NFL, I understand it. They were very prescient, I believe, in what they were talking about here because of things like this Chris Henry story and others that have come out this year where people are being accused of doing things and it's not really them. There are some sickos out there who just want to, you know, do stupid things to get people in trouble just to stir the drink. And that's the problem with social media. It's the problem with, you know, athletes who are already in the public eye being involved in all of this. The best thing I can tell anybody who would listen to this program, and first of all, I would encourage you to come directly to me or directly to Eric or anybody else. I've got a Twitter, you know, account. I've got a Facebook page. Come on. That's fine. I'd love to exchange views and ideas and let you know what's going on, all that kind of stuff. It's great. You can do that. But what I would caution you with is anytime you see something reported or talked about, take it with a grain of salt. First of all, you don't know who really it might be. Now, I can assure you that my accounts are my accounts. So if you find my name on Facebook, John Rook, that's the name of my page. When the Facebook came out with that option, I was one of the first to get it, and I actually got my name. I did not get my name on my Twitter account. I tried to get my name. It was already taken. A little scary. Now, I know that there are a few other John Rooks that spell their name like me that are out there, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But, you know, I don't know these guys.
But everybody knows it. Will know it's you when they see pictures taken from the broadcast booth on game day.
That's also true. That's also true.
You had a great shot of a snow-filled stadium back in October.
We did?
You did, yeah.
You didn't even know
it. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, you took a picture from the broadcast booth and
did
said,
I?
Snow in October?
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I did do that. Absolutely. Okay, that's right. He's right. I did do that. See, I forget.
Clearly, I follow John Rook.
Wow. Well, that's a little scary. Thank you.
I also check out Scalavino.com.
Ooh, do you have Scalavino.com?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. I'll have to check it out now.
What's on it? No formal artistic training.
Artwork.
Artwork?
Yeah.
Very nice. I will check it out.
Okay.
Do you have a fan page?
Not really.
Okay.
No, I don't.
No. I'm a fan of Scalavino.com.
No.
Okay. Well, I'll check it out.
No fans.
But here's the thing. You just have to be careful with what's out there. And like I would suggest to you, and this is why I love when we do what we do on Tuesdays here with Nitpick Tuesday, we have a chance here to allow a little bit of breathing room between a good performance or a bad performance on a Sunday. So we can, like, you know, actually let our emotions calm down a little bit. So anything you read on Twitter or on Facebook, calm down first. No matter if it gets your blood going, calm down.
Well, that's kind of like the old adage about emails or, you know, writing letters.
Mm-hmm.
When you send an email to somebody, you know, a heated email, write it out first.
Absolutely.
Then read it. Then reread it. And then edit it. And soften it, because usually when you write something in the heat of the moment, you're sorry about it afterwards.
Right.
You know, it's kind of the same thing.
Right. I would agree with that.
You know,
frankly, in a business setting, I will be the first to tell you that sometimes in a business sense, that's hard for me to do because I want to make sure that I get out exactly how I feel about it. And I feel that if I let, you know, a day or two go by, then I'm not going to be able to accurately portray how I feel. That's my biggest fault. Sometimes I don't let enough time go between, you know, the response that I want to have as opposed to the response I should have.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you consider, you know, tweeting and Facebooking and all that kind of stuff, and of course, you know, we have that available for you here right here on Patriots.com and everything else that we do here, just consider the source. Know that, you know, if you really want the source, that you have to come to Patriots.com to get it. Because, you know, sometimes the players and the coaches may not say a lot, but whatever they do say, you're going to get it accurately here. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah.
That's the basic thing. So that kind of threw me for a loop today when I saw that, because here's a guy, you know, who's well-respected in the industry in Fraley, who, you know, just got completely thrown under the bus. He must have really pissed somebody off. That's all I can tell you. For someone, you know, to do that to him, it's just like, wow. And why would you choose this particular avenue to do it? And how did this person have, you know, information or knowledge of any of the things that he was talking about? It's just a little scary. It almost makes it seem like it was an inside job.
Yeah, it's I don't know.
That's just scary.
I think you hit it on the head earlier. There are just a lot of wacky, crazy people out there who are looking for attention in whatever way they can get it. And some maybe feel like doing something like that, sabotaging somebody else's identity, is the way to go about it. And it's a warped way of looking at the world, but unfortunately, the one we live in today.
Webradio@patriots.com is our email address. That, of course, is the way that you get a hold of us here. If you have some comments on tweeting and Facebooking and the Chris Henry story in regards to that, I'd love to hear your thoughts about it. Maybe you have your own thoughts as to, you know, your own Twitter accounts or your own Facebook page or how often you do that or what you believe or what you don't believe, or maybe you've got guidelines that you follow when it comes to social networking. I think it's an interesting story. I think it's one that obviously we're going to have to deal with from time to time. There is no real right or wrong way to go about it. It's just that, you know, when people are fraudulent in their portrayals of, you know, individuals, you know, through Facebook or Twitter, there's no guard, there's no defense, there's no criminal charges that are coming because the social network. I mean, it's the blogosphere, it's the internet. I mean, it's the wild, wild west of the 21st century. Mm-hmm. You know, I really believe that strongly. I think when I first heard that back in the 90s about the internet, I thought that was an interesting analogy, and I still think it's more appropriate now than it ever was. This is the wild, wild west. You know, this is like, you know, the 1880s when you packed your six shooter, and I don't like the way you look, you're ugly, boom, you're dead. And that's the way it used to be in some of the old coal mining towns out in the West. And, you know, and you might spend 60 days in jail or whatever if the local sheriff was able to catch you. But, you know, if you had a fast enough horse, your ass was out of town. They weren't going to get you, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Billy the Kid, all that stuff was real back then, you know? So the internet is like that. It's the wild, wild west of the 21st century.
And it's ironic that it, you know, it's coincidental or ironic, I guess, that all of this is based off of
www.wild wild west.
I never World Wide Web, www.
Wild Wild West. I like that. Very good analogy. Very, I like that.
It wasn't meant to be a joke, Doc.
You should patent that.
It was kind of funny.
It was kind of funny. But it's true. It's true. So, all right. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on the whole story, on the tragedy that happened in Cincinnati, and see if that rings or, you know, strikes a chord with anyone there. Obviously, we've got, you know, a football game to play on Sunday with the Buffalo Bills. I am a little surprised. You guys talked about it briefly. A little surprised that the Patriots are giving 7 on the road. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just like, wow. For a team that doesn't have a road win, technically.
I think that speaks more to Buffalo's
maybe, but I just think that's extraordinary.
Oh, yeah.
And that just tells me that even though fans and or media around the NFL are beginning to, I don't want to say lose faith. Let's just say they don't think of the Patriots the same way they might have thought of them in the beginning of the year. Tells me that the odds makers still think the Patriots are very strong.
Strong enough, at least,
for them to make money, which is all the odds makers are in it for. That's why they lay odds. They're in it to make money. Yep. And so they really believe the Patriots are a strong enough entity to be able to put down that kind of number, because they're not going to put down a number thinking, oh, we're going to go into this losing money. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make money, which is why they set the spread the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, it's up to the fans and up to, you know, bettors to decide which way they want to go on that 7-point spread. You know, you take the Patriots if you think they're going to cover it. You take Buffalo if you think, you know, Buffalo's going to cover it. My own personal feeling is that, you know, like Paul, I believe, said, what did you say? That are they going to cover? Did you think they
would? I did. It took me, I was ambivalent, but I ended up going with New England.
I have to go with what Paul said. I think the Patriots win it barely. And I don't think it's 7 points. I'm going to say probably in the realm of 20 to 17. That's what I think. And I think it's going to get, I think it could even go down to a last second kick. I mean, that's. I feel pretty strongly about it, and I feel as strongly about this as I have any other game this year. Now, I hope I'm wrong, and they go out and they clock them 35-10. That'd be great, yeah. But I just don't see that happening. I just think that, you know, this game is tailor-made for a struggle, and that the Patriots will be fortunate to win it.
I think that's you can make that argument for the rest of the games this year.
Well, you and I said that yesterday a little bit, you know. It's going to be that way the rest of this year. It's going to be that way certainly next week when Jacksonville comes in. And then
when we go to Houston.
Depending upon what happens with Houston, if they're still, you know, mathematically alive and whether or not they need to have the win, or if, for that matter, if the Patriots are already locked into a playoff spot by that time.
And, you know, not that history matters too much in these things, but, you know, it's interesting to note the last time New England played the Texans in Houston was that game when Brady had to throw the fourth down touchdown pass to Daniel Graham, and they went into overtime. And
that's right.
They struggled against that was an expansion team
then,
and they struggled on the road. It just so happened, you know. But
well, you've got six teams fighting for that last playoff spot right now. All within a game of each other, fighting for the number six seed in the AFC.
A lot of teams playing for a lot of different things in
these last
few weeks.
And I'm not entirely certain. I haven't looked at the schedule. We'll look at it a little bit more closely with Russell in the second hour here. But I'm not entirely certain that that's going to change much after this week. It's going to probably go through the go down at least
week 17.
Yeah. Pretty close.
Which is exactly what the NFL wants, though, too.
Well, of course,
competitive games all the way to the very end.
And plus, if you've got six
teams
got six teams for one spot, the other five teams are pretty much a given that they're going to get in. If my math is correct, that is 11 out of 16 teams in the AFC that are going to go right down to the last week, it would appear, you know, being playoff eligible.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good percentage.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly, as you said, what the NFL wants.
Mm-hmm.
At least, you know, the Patriots are in the mix, you know, to this point in time. I don't know that, I mean, should the Patriots win the game? Yeah, they should. Will they is an entirely different matter. I don't know if, you know, what happened last week with the distractions that happened off of the field are going to be something that will be all that easy for this team to overcome. There'll probably be some lingering effect, the whole, you know, Randy Moss escapade. And I find it kind of interesting that a guy like, what's his name? The running back on ESPN.
Merrill Hodge.
Thank you. Merrill Hodge came to his defense. Did you see that?
I heard about it. Okay. I didn't see it.
Yeah, he came to his defense and said, you know, I've looked at the tape over and over and over and over again, and he said, I saw no instance in which Randy was dogging it on the field. Now,
in that particular game?
In that particular game. Now, we can say we thought he was dogging it when he ball, you know, hits his hands and goes off his hands, or when he gives up on a route at the end and a defensive back picks off Tom Brady. We can say that we think he's dogged it, but Merrill Hodge, who frankly has not exactly been a huge Patriot fan during the time that Patriots have been one of the dominant teams. For him to come out and take defense of Randy like that, I thought was not only out of character, but extraordinarily positive for Moss.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what people saw more was not necessarily fans, I'm saying, or was what we saw on the sideline with Moss when he had that blank stare ahead when Brady was trying to talk to him. And they showed that shot a few times.
Yes, they did.
And I think that's what fans more got upset about was his reaction there, sitting on the defensive bench while all the other guys were on the offensive bench, sitting by himself while the defense was on the field. Brady coming over, trying to give him a pep talk, and he just kind of stared ahead, didn't really look him in eye to eye. And I think that's, I mean, I'm speaking for myself, but I think that's what most people saw. Because on television, it's hard to, unless they show the replay of a guy over and over again from a different position, you don't normally get the ISO on a guy or the all 22 shot from the end zone, the coach's tape, as they call it, where you can see the whole play develop and whether or not, you know, if a guy is out of the play or not. Taking himself out of the play. So, you know, but you're right. What Hodge said, I'm surprised by, because he hasn't been a Patriots backer. He's, you know, clearly he makes no effort to hide the fact that he's Pittsburgh partisan because he played for them for a while. But if he said he watched the tape and saw that, you have to take him at his word and his opinion.
You would think so. I mean, I thought the whole thing was not only out of character, but I thought it was just stunning for its sort of reversal in philosophy almost.
Mm-hmm. And then you've had the opposite this week, too. You had guys like Chris Carter and somebody mentioned Jerry Rice.
Although Jerry Rice also hammered
comments, to the negative.
Jerry Rice hammered him. Although I think, and I didn't hear it, but I read somewhere where Chris Carter did some backpedaling on it. After he originally slammed him, he came off of his original stance. So I don't know if it was because, you know, he took flack for it or if they actually had a change of heart or whatever, but I read that somewhere yesterday. So I hadn't seen it perfectly, so I'm not you know, personally, so I'm not sure that that's entirely accurate, but I read that somewhere where Carter was backpedaling a little bit off his original stance. And, you know, fact remains is that, you know, the Patriots are still going to throw to Randy if he's open. They're still going to use him as a decoy, which is why Wes Welker is getting a lot of the opportunity that he's getting. And if you follow the team at all, with any closeness, you realize that that's what's going on. Maybe he's maybe he was frustrated over being used as a decoy, and, you know, he wants to be the man. Everybody wants to be the man out there, but frankly, that's the way that the Patriots are having success right now, is by, you know, Moss being the decoy because he's still drawing double teams. And it's leaving, you know, Welker in single coverage. So that's the big thing. You know, when Wes Welker starts getting double teamed, then, all right, Randy, now it's time to go. Now it's time to go. All right, we'll take a timeout here. Dan Dierdorf from CBS Sports is coming up. Russell Baxter in hour number two inside the playbook.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
It's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Back inside the playbook on a Thursday here on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook and PFW's Eric Scalavino. We will catch up with Dan here coming up very shortly. And then Russell Baxter again coming up at the top of the hour. A couple of emails here that we had left over from yesterday's show, Eric, that I think are actually pretty good. We were talking about television coverage a little bit, and looks like, and I guess you guys may have been doing this earlier today as well, talking about some of the TV teams and whatever. George sends this email in, says it's an answer to the question about the Fox coverage. First of all, I can't tell you how much I hate that BS broadcasting team. Instead of describing what is happening, they spend the entire broadcast saying what the team should do. I'm not sure why broadcasting teams feel the need to do that. You know, I mean, broadcasting is still reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Reporting means that, you know, you should be describing and telling us what is happening, not what should be happening. Now, if the analyst wants to step out and say, well, maybe they should be doing this if this is what they're trying to accomplish. I think that's fine because I think there is room for an analyst to put his opinion into a particular, you know, instance.
In between telling us what is happening.
Right, right. But it's the play-by-play guy's job on television, as I like to put it, is to drive the bus.
Mm-hmm.
An analyst should offer some opinion when it's warranted after you look at what's going on the field and tell people what's transpiring on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's ask an analyst that very question then. Dan Dierdorf from CBS Sports joining us here inside the playbook. Dan, John and Eric here. Thanks for taking some time today.
How are you today?
We're great. What we're talking about is some of the television coverage that's out there, and we've had some fans that I guess are a little unsettled that sometimes they hear on television play-by-play, color, analysts, what have you, guys tell viewers what teams should be doing as opposed to what they are doing. Where do you draw the line between the two, and when do you find the time to add your own conjecture in there?
Oh, geez. You know, it's a I guess everybody has a different style of doing it. You run the risk of going down an awfully slippery slope when you start talking about what a team should be doing. When you've been around the game as long as I have, you realize that it's the coaches and the players that have spent countless hours during the off season, during the meetings, during practices, OTAs, getting ready for these games and these moments and these situations. And it's more often than not, it's kind of silly to offer an opinion from upstairs. Well, I think they ought to be doing this. Well, the reason they're doing what they're doing is they obviously feel that that's what's going to give them the best opportunity to succeed. And mm-hmm. I think an analyst sometimes can find himself in a tough spot by trying to outthink the coaches and the players.
You know, that unless an analyst, you know, obviously has individual knowledge of what, you know, a player or a team would call in a particular instance, and that, you know, obviously relationship with coaches and studying and film study and all that stuff comes into play here. But unless you actually know what the play call is going to be in that particular instance, I find it almost presumptuous, if not arrogant sometimes, to be told this is what someone should do as opposed to someone telling me why something is happening on the field.
Right.
Do you agree or disagree with that?
No, I agree with you, and it's also dangerous to say, well, this is what so-and-so is thinking. I hear that a lot. And
yeah.
I like to think that I don't do that because that's insane. Who knows what someone is thinking? You can offer an educated guess. They might be thinking this, but too many times I hear people that speak in absolutes. Well, this is exactly what he's thinking in this situation. And oh, really?
Yeah.
It's hard. But let me tell you something about my job. The game, the pace of the game has sped up considerably. When they reduced the play clock down to 40 seconds, there's much less time now in between plays. The telecast is more, it's busier now because there are, you know, packaged elements, you know, recaps, you know, last drive, you know, there'll be a little three-play clip. There's promotions to do. There's NFL.com. There's Patriots. You know what I'm saying? It's very fast-paced.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, the job has gotten more difficult as the years have gone by. It used to be a lot easier because it used to be a lot more leisurely than it is now up in the booth.
I would totally agree with that. Dan Dierdorf from CBS Sports, who'll be covering the Pats and Bills with Greg Gumbel this weekend, joining us here in the playbook. We'd be remiss, Dan, if we didn't ask you your reaction to the tragedy that happened in Cincinnati with Chris Henry's passing. And I found the whole thing just shocking today, and I'm not even sure I have an opinion on it just yet, but I wondered what maybe thoughts you might have.
Oh, I don't know all the details yet, except that it appears that he was thrown out of the back of a pickup truck in what people are speculating was a domestic situation. Again, the details are so sketchy, it's kind of dangerous to even speculate as to what might happen. But what a star-crossed career Chris Henry had, untold talent and yet lots of off-the-field problems. I just did Cincinnati last week. I did their game up in Minnesota, and, of course, Chris is on IR, and you know, his loss is, his not being on that team right now is really hurting them in their ability to pass. Carson Palmer can't, they don't have much of a passing game. They didn't even have 100 yards passing against Minnesota, and a lot of that is because Chris Henry isn't on the other side of Ocho Cinco to to take some coverage away and stretch the field. And, of course, now he's not going to be there permanently. Just, it's always tragic when someone dies young.
No doubt.
Dan, on back to this game with New England and Buffalo that you're going to be calling this weekend, has it surprised you, considering all of the hype that New England received this past offseason and the odds makers saying that they were going to be, you know, favored to win the Super Bowl, and a lot of the free agent moves they made, and the number of young players they drafted, there seemed to be a lot of momentum for New England getting back on top and getting back to the Super Bowl. Are you surprised at how this season has played out for them?
Well, the biggest – well, first of all, in the beginning, watching Tom come back, that was no surprise. I've had major reconstructive knee surgery, and I know that it takes time. And there's no way any quarterback, even one as gifted as Tom Brady, you can't erase an entire season of not being able to compete, not being able to do the work that it takes to play, and then think you're just going to pick it up in stride. So the beginning didn't surprise me. I think, like most people, the calling card of all good football teams, and I mean all good football teams, is being able to win on the road. And New England's struggles on the road is what really has surprised me. That's just out of character. Now, you can't subtract. I think everybody knew that the defense was going to be a work in progress, that it was going to have some growing pains. You can't subtract that much talent, that much veteran leadership, and not have it have some effect. And as the season has gone on, I think they're just getting better and better defensively. So, this is a big game for them. They just obviously can't stumble in Buffalo. If this is the Patriots' time of year, it's the time of year that they have always shined before, and I don't expect that to change.
The Buffalo Bills obviously have a different head coach. They've got a different quarterback since the time Patriots played them last in the opening game. Do you feel like, you know, and I don't know if this is overrated or not, but this is where I would rely on your expertise here, Dan, is the fact that Bills don't have anything to play for postseason-wise, but you've got players and certainly a coach now that might be playing for a job. Does that really happen? Do guys really bring their game up a level when something like that seems to be all that there is left out there to play for?
I can't conceive of that. If anything, I think it goes the other direction. Now, when you have nothing to lose, I think the one dynamic that is there is that from a coaching standpoint, you're more likely to take a chance. Whether that's going for it on fourth down, whether that's fake punts, whether that's being more aggressive in your blitz calling or whatever, that is real. From a player's perspective, no way are they going to play harder because they like Perry Fuel. No way are they going to give a greater effort because they think maybe they're playing for their job. You're playing for your job in week one, and if you have to think like that in week 16 or 15, well, that, you know, you're a loser to begin with.
That's putting it mildly, but
yeah,
I like
it. You are. If that's the kind of thing where you're going, uh-oh, it's almost Christmas time, and gee whiz, if I don't pick it up here, I'm liable to get released. Well,
sure.
you already have one foot out the door.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's I think it's surprising to all of us, though, that as you know, week one, all the talk was Buffalo, no huddle. They got this new offense, and now it's at the end of the year. They've got all of these new changes, and now, just now, Terrell Owens is starting to be more of a part of that offense again. Has that surprised you at all, Dan?
Well, you can have all the talented receivers in the world, but if you can't get them the football, it doesn't matter. And the Patriots and the Colts, and you know, Tom Brady in seasons past, you know, before Randy Moss got there, you'd look at the receiving core of the Patriots and you'd go, well, how are they able to pass the, you know, how are they able to have a successful passing game at all? And then you realize, well, it's because of the quarterback. The quarterback is so good, he makes everybody around him better. And you know, Peyton Manning is doing that this year with Indianapolis with those kids he's got, Garcon and Colley, but you know what? It doesn't work the other way around. You can have all the talent you want at wide receiver, but if the quarterback position is substandard, and if it's not up to NFL caliber where you get the ball to these guys and put it there in good position, those guys, they're ineffective. And that's been the problem. There just hasn't been quality quarterback play for Buffalo this year. I don't care who they got playing wide receiver.
Dan, a final question for you here. As you've looked at the Patriots this season and what you've seen transpire over the last few weeks, if you had one piece of advice, one bit of, I'm going to kind of ask you now for your opinion as opposed to putting on your analyst hat when you're on the television, I guess. But after, based on what you've seen of this team, if you could make one move to improve this team and put this team in position to actually compete for a possible Super Bowl berth, what would it be?
Their offensive line to continue to get better and to continue to be more physical in the running game and to block the best they've blocked all season. I just think that when I've seen the Patriots struggle, they've struggled because the offensive line, I think, wasn't playing really well. And I think that if Tom Brady is upright and if you can just eke out 80, 90 yards running the football but running it effectively in certain situations, I think that offensive line, if they come together, if they gel, and if they have a strong December and January, they're the unit I think that will carry the Patriots.
Well, that would certainly keep Aaron Schoble maybe away from Tom Brady a little bit more.
Well, that's exactly right. But, it's when they've made mistakes, it's when I think New England has struggled. So, yeah, if I was to look at one group and say, here's the guys I think that could really carry this team, put the team on their back, and away they go, it would be the O-line.
Very good. Dan, thanks so much for the time today. We'll look forward to listening in on Sunday.
My pleasure. Thanks.
You got it. Dan Dierdorf, CBS Sports. He and Greg Gumbel will have the broadcast on CBS on Sunday afternoon in Buffalo.
You surprised that a former
offensive lineman would say that?
Not really. About an offensive line?
But you know what, though? That is his area of expertise, since he obviously is an all-pro player, having been in there and played high caliber for a number of years. I remember when he played for St. Louis, and I hated him. Just because St. Louis was really good, and they were always a thorn in Dallas' side when I grew up a Cowboy fan, and Dierdorf was one of those guys, though, that you hated, but you respected because you knew he was so doggone good.
Wish you had him on your team.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Well, that kind of thing.
He's on the other team.
Absolutely.
Was on your
him
team.
And Conrad Dober, too, the biter,
he was a dirty player, though, wasn't he?
A little bit, yeah.
He was was his calling card.
But.
Dierdorf wasn't considered a dirty player.
No, not entirely, no. He was considered a tough, hard-nosed, just one of those guys that, if you knew you were on the defensive line having to go up against him, you didn't want to fight this guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like everybody who went up against John Hanna in his career. It's like, oh, God, I've got Hog Hanna. Holy crap, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. The fact is that it's just it's a war of attrition. You just have to survive the battle. Try not to let him beat you too much. Mm-hmm. Keep your team in the game. Take it one play at a time. Literally, that sounds very cliche-ish, but you put blinders on. You worry about one play at a time. God, kept him out of the backfield that play. All right, let's concentrate on the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you can do in an instance like that. And that's why I had great respect for a guy like Dierdorf during his career, because he was that type of player. It's like, I got to keep him out of the backfield. Oh, geez, I got to pull on this play. Who's going to cover my backside when Dierdorf's going to be charging, hard down on the quarterback and blah, blah, blah. So, he was that kind of player. But, no, that's his area of expertise is the offensive line. So I'm not entirely surprised that he would say that. I'm just a little surprised that it might not have come from the defensive side of the ball, since we all agree that right now this team can't stop running water.
A little surprising his comments were that he's seen the defense get better and better towards the end of the year. And I think most of us think just the opposite, that they were better in the beginning of the season or at least by the midway point, and that the defense has kind of struggled since then as far as making plays and rushing the passer and in the defensive backfield. But, he's seeing something different from his perspective. So that's, it's interesting to get an outsider. We see so much of it and so much up close, like you said, John. I think it's refreshing sometimes to get an outsider's point of view.
Absolutely. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is our telephone number. If you have some thoughts as well on the game on Sunday, got some score predictions you'd like to share, by all means, fire it off here. I'm going to go back to the email that we had a little while ago from George, because he had some other interesting points. There's a very well-thought-out email. He says, we were talking also about earlier this week about Pats fans and, how we're just becoming accustomed to, Super Bowl berths, and basically anything less than that is a disappointment. We brought that up a little bit on yesterday's show.
Yep.
And he says, I do agree that Pats fans are being spoiled. I composed an entire email a couple of weeks ago about the second half struggles, hoping to see what you guys think of my theory, and here it is. I think effort is underestimated in football as a determining factor as to who wins. I think consistency of effort has been perhaps the primary reason for the Pats dynasty. Perhaps this year their talent level or team coordination or something means that the effort level is even more crucial to their success. So my theory is that the Pats were out-efforting other teams early on, but by the half, when the other team gets tired of getting out-hustled and out-ass-busted, they come out and match the Pats more closely. When this happens, the Pats' limitations begin to show. Interesting.
I couldn't care less about the team
struggling. I find that interesting only because I think that was a hallmark of the Patriots teams in the early part of this decade. Certainly the hustle, the effort. You had, you know, those mid-range, mid-level street free agent guys with the chips on the shoulder, that, you know, the guys that came in here and produced because they felt like they had something to prove, and that's how this team sort of built itself. And so, yes, I would say that effort means everything to those teams. And maybe this team being younger now, and this is where I happen to agree with George in the email here, this team being younger, we don't have as many of those guys on this team. And therefore, these younger guys have not learned what we all know will work and will be successful. Does that make any sense?
It does. I'm going to take a little different approach to it. I think maybe, and I know this, you know, some fans might think that's being pessimistic, but maybe the players that we have are giving their 100% effort.
I don't doubt that.
It's just that their best effort might not be as good as the best efforts of the guys that we had earlier in this decade. You know, has that occurred to people?
Yeah. And I think what I just said kind of goes hand in hand with that, to be honest with you. We've got younger players. We've known that you need to get younger, but younger players obviously have not learned the ways of the world in the NFL as much as some of the veterans. The veterans that we still have on this team aren't quite as demonstrative as others who have since now come and gone on this team. Therefore, there's no one to lead by example. The younger players are out there doing what they know how to do best. There's a disconnect. There is a definitive disconnect. We brought this up a little yesterday. Sometimes it might be between the players and the coaching staff, or the coaching staff of the players amongst themselves. There's a disconnect here that we have not had to deal with really at any other time in this decade, for the most part.
Right.
And throw out
the 2000 season.
How best now to overcome that disconnect and reconnect? Frankly, I think the only way that you can do that is by continuing to play. And continuing to, you know, lead by example. Somebody hopefully will step up. Who knows? Now, that's actually a very, very poignant shot. Turn and look over your shoulder right there. Can you tell that Chad Ochocinco has been crying his eyes out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's sad. He's being interviewed right now, talking obviously about...
Other than that, man.
Yeah.
He's going to be missed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was from NFL Network.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's really tough. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt the thought, but
no, that's all
right. I saw that, and that just really stunned me.
Yeah, they've been ESPN and all the other teams
NFL
we have
Network,
on in here,
yeah.
NFL Network, have been playing that clip over and over since before our show started here. But today in the locker room, Sean Springs talked a little bit about, he was never a teammate of his, but he went through a similar thing with Sean Taylor in Washington.
Sure, yeah.
So
right.
He was a popular guy among the media today because they wanted to have him sort of compare the two situations and how you deal with that as a team, as an individual. So he had some, you know, he just could only speak about his perspective on it, which was, you know, his big point was it doesn't matter because somebody brought up, you know, for a guy that young, you know, you were an older veteran, maybe you helped out the younger guys, and he said, you know what, something like that, age doesn't really matter.
No.
You're equally shocked whether you're a young guy veteran or, a rookie or an older guy veteran. Something like that just takes you by a complete surprise. And how do you deal with that as a team? You know, especially middle of the season, you have to deal with that and prepare for the next game coming up. It's no wonder why teams come out so emotional following tragedies like that.
Sure.
Even players, you know, like when Brett Favre lost his father few years ago, and he came out and had a monstrous game.
Unbelievable game.
It, you know, you kind of tend to think that people will play better. Teams, individuals will play better coming off of something like that. And, you know, Springs also said that, you know, the one thing that you try to take with you in dealing with that is your lost friend would want it that way. Want you to go out and continue to play.
Sure.
And not grieve so much, but, you know, he would want you to be out there playing. And they sort of try to talk themselves into that or remind themselves of that as they go into their preparations for the game and as they go into the game.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit more from George's email here, because he touched on a couple of other subjects I thought were very good. We're giving George a lot of credit here today, but it's a good email. He says, one more thing about Brady and injury. He says, over his career, I've seen a few examples of games in which he took some tough hits and subsequently made poor decisions. I wonder if the interception in the end zone against Miami was partially a result of his concentration being limited by physical pain. My impression is that Tom is playing with a lot of pain right now. He still seemed to be gutting it out in his post-game interview. I'm afraid that may lead to more mistakes, especially if he takes a painful hit.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt he's been playing through pain and through injury, but at this time of year, you know, you should be lucky that he's even out there gutting it through, but I think he realizes what's at stake, and I guess, you know, these players, it takes a lot for a player not to want to be out there, especially a guy like Brady who, you know, we know what kind of a competitor he is. You do have to be concerned, though. I mean, everything that he has listed as injuries affects his throwing, his shoulder, the finger,
and the ribs,
and the ribs now.
Mm-hmm.
All of that combines for, you know, every pass he throws, he has to be going through something painful.
I think it's a pretty good observation.
You know.
Pretty good observation. See, there are some fans out there that actually pay attention and put some logic to what they say.
That's pretty good. Write in more.
Yeah, it's good information right there. George, that's an excellent email. Yeah, good job out of you. Matthew sent this note yesterday after we were talking about the Patriots building for the future, and he says, the Pats don't care about winning championships. It's a business. They'd rather ensure 5 or 6 years of consistent 10 to 12 win seasons rather than one Super Bowl and 10 years of sterility. That's why they're building and not going for another Super Bowl win. Do you
so
buy that?
Ridiculous.
I don't buy that, no. You're in this business for one reason.
To win.
Yeah.
Which is why the moves made this year by this team are completely and totally mind-boggling.
Hello, you play to win the game.
Thank you, Herm.
Yes.
Thank you. Where have you been this week, Herm? We've been talking about this, and we've been waiting for you to chirp in from the sidelines.
He's been doing.
Hello?
Thank
Hello?
You.
He's been
Thank
doing
you.
Those Coors Light commercials.
It's very true.
Hello?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, thanks, Herm. Now go back to your box. but seriously, you know, you're supposed to. This game is all about winning the hardware, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine that there's a brain trust meeting in any team, this one in particular, where they're saying, you know what, let's not win the Super Bowl this year. Let's just be good for the next five years.
Which is why I still pull my hair out. At least I have hair to pull out.
I resent that also.
I realize that. I got two follically challenged guys here with me.
Bald. Don't sugarcoat it.
I'm being nice.
Don't be PC.
I'm just being nice.
Balding.
Balding. Oh, you mean it's still coming out in clumps?
No, that balding, that's denial. Bald.
See, that's,
isn't it time for you to go back
like
upstairs?
That's what I like about Scalabino. He's great. He's just like, I'm very matter of fact about this.
I mean,
bald.
But it's, can't do anything about it, really.
No, you can't.
I mean, you can, but it
you
looks
could.
Horrible. No attempt.
You've never thought about going to have like a hair transplant or any of that stuff?
Well, you think about it, but then you see the people who have done it, and they're not fooling anybody. So I would rather look this way naturally than to try to fake it and look
bald
horrendous.
Is beautiful, baby.
Horrendous.
Yeah, I'm not that far away from pulling a Scalavino.
Ooh, you really? You're going to shave it?
My wife says
it's
no.
So much easier.
But it might happen.
Wife says no.
Come on, you're not that far away right now. I mean, it wouldn't really look that different, Doc. Honestly,
this is true.
I mean, that's not taking a shot either. I mean, it's just at that point,
it is why, what it
you
is.
Know, why fight Mother Nature? You know.
Where have I heard that phrase before?
Seriously, John, have you seen anybody who goes to those hair restoration things? You can tell. You can spot them from a mile away.
Yeah. I've known some guys who were, you know, bald that, you know, decided to go and have a little done. And a couple of them look good, but because I knew them beforehand, I mean,
right.
Obviously I can tell. You know, does it look natural? Some look better than others. I'll just put
some,
it that way.
Of course.
Some look better than others.
Right. They just, not all, none of them really look.
And you know what? I understand why some guys would want to do it. It's just part of their whole, you know, manhood, virility, whatever. I mean, that's fine. You know, maybe they feel better about themselves with more hair. I've never been that point where I have to worry about that or obviously my ever-expanding waistline or anything else that I got going on. Hell, I'm 50.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to have at least a little bit of something somewhere. A little cushion for the pushing, right? Come on.
That's another great moment.
Yeah, I know. Thank you very much. That's truly a playbook moment, isn't it?
It is.
Am I lying to anybody here? I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. I mean, I see these stupid. You know what really gets me? I gotta give you one now before. I'll let you get going.
It's time for that playbook tangent.
I understand. I'm getting off on the playbook tangent here. What gets me is when I'm traveling. I've had to do a lot of traveling this year, and will still. Yeah, exactly. Pull on out, baby. Read the airline magazines, and you go through the ads, and you see the pictures of the 60-year-old doctors who have bodies like 30-year-olds because they've taken shots of HGH or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on. Who really?
Yeah.
But who really? Come on. First of all, every picture, I don't care if it's real or not, but every picture happens to be from a physician. Mm-hmm. Now, did it dawn on anybody who might be looking at this and actually thinking about doing this, realize that maybe the only people that can afford to do it are physicians?
Maybe.
Because it's expensive. You know what a shot of HGH costs?
No.
Five figures.
Wow.
Upwards of five figures.
Yeah.
10,000 plus.
And, you know, what's wrong with just trying to get in shape naturally?
Nothing wrong.
Run around, do some sit-ups.
Yeah,
crunches,
exactly.
Play some basketball or tennis or whatever.
Or throw out
go
your
swimming.
Or throw out your shoulder to a bunch of 12-year-olds like I have throwing, you know, baseball.
Oh, mm-hmm. Really?
Oh, yeah.
You need a jugs machine for that, my friend.
Believe me, I've learned the hard way. But, you know, I'm just like, I look at those things and I look at those ads and I'm going, you know, if it were that simple and I actually had $6,000 or $7,000 to share on a shot of HGH or something like that with somebody, sure, I'd do it if it was that easy. But nothing's ever that easy.
I don't know if I'd
If I could tell you right now that in this vial right here, this imaginary vial that I have with a big long needle on the end of it, okay, was the fountain of youth, and I could add 10 years to your life if you took it, and you knew unequivocally that I could add 10 years to your life if you took that shot, would you take it?
What are the side effects?
No side effects.
Impotent.
No. Hells no.
Depends on how much you're getting.
But if it works,
you're not getting anything anyway, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but if it works, then there's the potential for you to get more, and then you wouldn't be able to do anything about it.
I suppose.
You have to weigh all these things.
There's
John.
A lot of things to weigh. I realize it's not as cut and dried as would you do it if you could do it. You know, I kid all the time with my fellow half centenarians.
Octogenarians?
Yeah, half octogenarians. You know, all of my friends are in the same age, bracket pretty much as I am. And, we kid all the time about, hey, you want to split a shot of HGH this month or whatever. Nobody ever does it. I mean, we're all the same, basically graying, and some of us have hair, some of us don't. Some of us have larger pot bellies, some of us have bigger asses. I mean, it's just the way it is when you get to be 50.
Ladies everywhere who are listening to Patriots Playbook have just disconnected their internet feed. Sam in Chicago is so long gone, it's not even funny.
Well done, Doc.
Sorry, Sam.
Well done. All right, I got to get back upstairs.
Right. Did you? How about a quick practice report today? Was there anything
sure.
to talk about?
Yes. News. Good news, two guys who weren't there yesterday, Brady and Moss.
We're back.
Good. Two guys who weren't there yesterday weren't there again today, Will Fork and Warren. You can add to that list Fred Taylor, who was there yesterday, was not there at the start of today.
Right.
And there were a few other players who, a little incomplete practice report, because all we got was stretching and the team effort of the media who was there trying to get everybody. And we just didn't have enough time to get everybody. So there were a few guys who we didn't see, but that doesn't mean they weren't there.
So
we kind of think they were there, but we didn't get a chance to
confirm.
We
won't know officially until the participation report comes out in about an hour.
Yeah,
right.
About an hour.
All right. Very good, E.
But they were outside on the game field
Working in cold weather?
Working in cold weather on the field turf, which they're going to face the same conditions up in Buffalo this weekend.
Do we know yet what the conditions are going to be Sunday?
I've been checking weather.com every day, and it's looking like it's getting colder and snowier as the week has gone on.
So we might have some of the white stuff.
We might have some white stuff both days, Saturday and Sunday, for when we fly in and when we leave.
I think that actually bodes well for the Patriots, to be honest with you. Play maybe a little closer to the vest.
They've never lost a snow game, so yes, it does.
Run the football, which they do well in that weather, and we know Buffalo is dead last in the league against the run. So,
yep.
Very good.
All right, well, we'll see you when we get back.
Have a good weekend. We'll see you next week.
Okay.
Eric Scalavino, PFW. Stick around, though. Hour number two, Russell Baxter, ESPN, coming up in the playbook.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun and back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio, back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hour number two, Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook, and we welcome in Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN. And
Yoo-hoo! Baxter!
ESPN family of networks. Russell, happy holidays to you and yours.
Hello, John. How you been?
Great. Actually not bad at all.
I'm getting used to you again.
Don't get too used to me, big fella. Still some basketball to be played here.
Okay.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask your reaction and the reaction of some of your cohorts, perhaps, to the whole Chris Henry story today. I think it's most unfortunate. But I also ask it in the vein of the whole, you know, Twitter story that came out about the breaking of that story. And it becomes a little bit scary now when, you know, some people portray to be who they're not and others, you know, have questions whether or not something is valid. And it's just a wild, wild world that we live in.
Well, I've kind of made this joke per se about the modern, I don't want to say the modern media, but the modern way we communicate now. And I think, you know, cell phones are great because, God forbid, your car breaks down.
Right.
It's great. But the Tiger Woods story and all this stuff, and, you know, I'm not absolving him of anything because he's come out and admitted his transgressions. And we've almost become a country of peeping Toms. And, you know, it's too bad because if we had Morse code like this years and years ago, we probably would have avoided a lot of tragedies. But it seems like now we walk around and we see something, we snap a photo, and we put it on. I mean, I kid my fellow workers all the time if they say something. I say, well, give me an hour, it'll be online. And I say that sarcastically, but I say it sadly because you're constantly looking over your shoulder now.
Right.
And the fact that you can impersonate people, you know, and you have to come out and, you know, I know our company, and because of just with the start of Twitter and so on, had to eventually come out with a confirmed Twitter list to make sure who was who, you know. But who's to say somebody's not walking down the street and claiming to be, you know, Adrian Peterson?
True.
And, you know, I think we've, some of our colleagues had that problem here earlier on some of our shows about people impersonating them and so on. But, you know, not to bury the lead or anything like that. But
right, right.
Horrible, horrible in the fact because, you know, listen, I'm a very idealistic soul. I root for these guys. I root for people in general. And I'm not just saying that after the fact. I think anybody who knows me knows how I am. I put a lot into what human beings are. I judge people's lives by motive. Okay? Mm-hmm. Not everybody is, I don't put athletes in a certain category. I don't put celebrities in a certain category. We're all people. We got legs, we got arms, we got teeth. Some of us are fortunate to have those. Some of us don't. Some of us are blessed with gifts. Some of us are blessed with hardships. We're all different, but we're all people. And in some ways, we all should look out for each other and so on. And, we all grow up differently, too. And maybe some of us grow up faster, and some of us never grow up at all. And apparently, Chris Henry was trying very, very hard to turn his life around. And a series of events, I mean, think about it. I mean, he gets reinstated with the team in the last year or so. He winds up getting off to a good start this year. He breaks his arm. Suddenly, he's not with the team. He's suddenly down with his fiancé, and then events, however they're going to play out and so on. And a young man is now gone, and he's 26-year-old, and he's got a fiancé, and he's got three kids. That's
right.
That's real life.
Right.
That's real, real life.
Yeah, it is.
And it's a shame. And I know other people will look at it differently because of Chris's past. I'm not one of those people that looks that way. I often cite, and I hope this comes out the right way, but this is the best way for me to frame it, so bear with me for a second, John.
Mm, sure.
It's a great, great movie named The Color Purple,
mm-hmm.
In which if anybody who knows the film knows it's Whoopi Goldberg plays a young woman who is absolutely tormented by her very evil husband, eventually has kids, eventually gets away from him, etc. And I'm, you know, there's so many other layers to it and so on.
Right.
He takes away her sister. She leaves the country, et cetera, et cetera. And at the very end of the movie, she's finally reunited with her sister. And the person who does the reuniting is actually Danny Glover. And there's a great scene at the end of the movie, and I know a lot of people know what I'm talking about. And people get very, very emotional, as I do when every time I see it, of them two seeing each other again. And the scene that always makes me emotional is watching Danny Glover look off into the distance to see that after all his life of doing all these rotten, rotten things, he did something good.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? There actually is good in all of us. That's kind of the way I live. I don't look at it the other way. And all I can say now is God bless Chris Henry. And it's just sad to, you know, I'm 50 years old.
Yep.
I mean, he lived half the life I did.
Yep.
And he's got kids, and having kids is everything now. I learned that 2 years ago. So not to get overly dramatic here and so on, but it's a shame we have to reflect on these things once something happens. We don't reflect on them every day.
Yeah, that's very true. I think that's a great point. You know, and of course, to the football end of it, teams react differently as to, you know, what tragedy does. The Bengals themselves were beginning to struggle a little bit anyway on the field. They've got a tough assignment this week. They've got to go on the road. They've got to play arguably the hottest team, if not the best team in pro football right at this moment in the San Diego Chargers on Sunday. What's your experience with teams having tragedy as a burden going into that next game?
Well, we saw what happened when Sean Taylor was murdered a couple of years ago, and the Redskins wound up losing a game to the Buffalo Bills. If you remember right, Joe Gibbs called back-to-back timeouts and
right.
Wound up, you know, missed field goal, kicked the field goal, wound up losing the game, and so on. And, you know, I remember somebody saying, well, what a coaching goof. And all I could think of was, are you forgetting what happened that week? Okay? I think it affects everybody differently. I mean, I know from working with Mike Golic here, they lost Jerome Brown in the off season,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of dedicated almost that next season to him. And there was a lot of emotion involved in that. And you know, I think it affects. It's an individual thing. You know, we saw earlier this year, unfortunately, that the Bengals have dealt with a tragedy this year. You know, the wife of defensive coordinator Mike Zimmer passed away unexpectedly before a game.
That's right.
And, you know, it's one of those things I thankfully don't keep statistics on per se, but I think it's – I think something happens every day. Listen, we have all lost people, and I think at any one time of the day you will be thinking of them. And for the Cincinnati Bengals, the thing I will say to get away from the tragic of Chris Henry to the reality of Chris Henry for one just one second is they have become a very defensive-oriented team that really runs the football. But since he came out of the lineup because of injury, I'm not talking about his death.
Right.
I'm talking about since he left with the injury. They're not a team that necessarily stretches the field, and that was painfully obvious last week when they played the Minnesota Vikings once they got behind.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about the Cincinnati Bengals at one time, which was big play-action passing with Rudy Johnson in the backfield, and you had Henry, and you had Ojo Cinco, and you had T.J. Houshmandzadeh. And they were one of the more efficient and prolific offenses in the league. They don't play like that anymore. And, again, talking about Henry on the field, which they lost for the season back in week 9 after he broke his arm. They've had to play differently, some of it by choice. But in a game like this where San Diego has thrown the ball and moved the ball on just about everybody, I think you're going to be hard-pressed to keep pace with them. And that's not even counting, like we're discussing here, their emotional state making that trip across cross-country.
Yeah, yeah. I think it'll be difficult myself, especially with the fact that they're going to have to travel. There is, of course, a pretty good one on the schedule tonight. Colts playing at the Jaguars, and the Patriots will get the Jags next week, so it certainly bears watching here. It also bears watching simply because the Colts can go a step closer to 16-0 in the regular season. Do you anticipate the Colts, should they win in the Thursday night game tonight, do you anticipate them coming off of the throttle a little bit over the last 2 weeks?
Well, I think, you know what's funny is they have been in this position numerous times, and Peyton Manning, more times than not in the last 5 or 6 years, always starts the game because he's never not started. Usually starts the game but rarely plays significant time. The only time he's played significantly in the last 4 or 5 years in the final game of the season was 2006. You'll remember that quite well because the Colts, despite a 12-4 record, were the 3 seed and had to play that extra playoff game. And I think you're kind of crossed in between becoming rusty and stagnant. Now, in some ways, I think this works out well for the Colts for the next 2 weeks because regardless, let's say they were still fighting for a playoff spot, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They were going to have a 10-day layoff no matter what because of the schedule. Okay, this is a Thursday night game, so they were going to have a little bit of a layoff. Even if they were fighting for a playoff spot, they would have probably played this in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, every team has to play Thursday night or Thanksgiving. I mean, we have a lot more Thursday games than we ever did. So they would have played this differently anyway. I don't think they'll take the foot off the throttle per se, but I think if they get the chance to rest people, they will. Because I don't think they want to have a stint where they play and then kind of take it easy for 2 weeks, and then you know already they're going to have 2 weeks off between the regular season and their first round of playoff opponent because they've clinched everything. You know, that can become very – you know how football is.
Sure.
You get out of rhythm, you get out of your routine, and who's more routine than Peyton Manning? It can be dangerous in terms of winning. And we have seen more than our share – of number one seeds. What I believe there's been one number one seed in either conference that has won the Super Bowl this decade. And that was the 03 New England Patriots.
Wow, is that right? Really?
Yeah. Okay, if you take who was in the championship game last year? 2 hosted 6 in the AFC.
Right.
4 hosted 6 in the NFC.
That's right.
When the Patriots and the Colts won their Super Bowl 3 years ago, the Colts were the 3, the Patriots were the 4.
Mm-hmm.
They played in the title game while 1 San Diego and 2 Baltimore both lost their first playoff games.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been hard enough even if you do play it, much less take that foot, like you said, take that foot off the pedal.
Right.
Very intriguing. It's very intriguing because we have 2 teams that are doing this at the same time. One, and I'll just throw this out there, I said it last week, one who is in the playoffs for the 8th straight year.
Right.
And another who is in the playoffs in the Saints for the seventh time in their entire history.
History, right. Very intriguing. Actually, as far as tonight's game is concerned, I kind of like the Jags only because I think the Jaguars, they're in that, you know, six-team race for that final spot. So, you know, and I just, for some reason or another, call me crazy, I think the Jags find a way to get it done tonight.
I don't call you crazy because I could see it happen. opposed to other years, it's an interesting Jacksonville team because we're so used to them being so huge in the trenches and really being that brawling kind of team. And I think their best brawling player right now remains Maurice Jones-Drew,
mm-hmm.
who strangely enough has had more than his share of scoring, like up close, ever since he took that intentional knee in the Jets game.
Right.
I mean, he was on a touchdown pace.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Probably reading too much into it and so on. But they're not a bowl you over type of Jaguars team. And it was funny to watch Miami actually outslug them last week. A 14-10 game seems like it's right up Jacksonville's alley. And it was actually Miami that wound up winning the 14-10 game. And I think that probably surprised some people.
Saturday night, Cowboys and the Saints. So the Saints get a primetime game on Saturday night. The Cowboys playing with their backs to the wall a little bit because I think a lot of people feel like they're going to just, you know, choke it up the rest of the year and that the Giants will find a way to sneak in and get maybe that one wild card spot out of the NFC East. So this is opportunity personified for the Cowboys.
Yes, it is. And, you know, what's funny is when I think of just the collapses of the Cowboys in December and stuff like that, I think about a team like last year that laid an egg 44-6 in the season finale.
Right.
I don't think the Cowboys have played all that bad the last 2 weeks. Okay, they have played against a hungry Giants team and a very, very good San Diego team. Now, do I question some of their play calling last week? I guess what I want to say is I do not see this big emphasis on Tony Romo, who seems to get a lot of this blame, and yet I think he has played very efficiently the last 2 weeks. Four runs on the right side of the offensive line, I thought was a little much last week. And when they had the chance to seize the momentum in the second quarter of that game last week, John, they didn't do it. They didn't score a touchdown. They missed a field goal after an interception. And that's when I will say it seemed like after that exchange, it seemed like they were a demoralized team in the mm-hmm. second half. And I know DeMarcus Ware got hurt later in the game.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it seemed like the air went out of their sails after the second quarter and not necessarily the Ware injury. I think that's what you had to be a little disappointing. And is it in their heads? I think it's in some of their heads about this quote-unquote December thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. I would be more concerned if they don't play well the last three games. Especially like at Washington, who I know who always gives them trouble. But to me, there's a difference between a collapse and then just maybe losing the teams that are better than you are.
Right, right.
You know, the difference here, let me throw out one more thing. Last year, they had a chance to clinch a playoff spot at Philadelphia week 17,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
This year, they already beat the Eagles in Philadelphia, which means they're hosting them. And I think the mindset in that is a totally different thing now. If they do turn around and go 1-4 down the stretch here, I think even if they get into the playoffs, it'll be a little disappointing.
I have to tend to agree, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going in with a head of steam and so on.
Yeah.
But I don't think they've played poorly the last 2 weeks. I think they just have come up a little short. But I think it's in total contrast because I thought last year Tony Romo makes the big mistake in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
They played Baltimore. In the final game at Texas Stadium, they allow two long touchdown runs late in the game by the Ravens to lose that game. And then, of course, they seemed totally demoralized and almost disinterested when they went to Philadelphia. I don't see that from them so far in the last two games.
Mm-hmm. Those that are chasing the Patriots, Dolphins playing at the Titans, Falcons playing at the Jets, who's more likely to win?
I think... Boy, that's cool. I think on paper it looks like the Jets, because I don't think we're going to see Matt Ryan. I haven't heard anything definite yet.
Okay.
And more importantly, I don't know if we're going to see Michael Turner,
mm-hmm.
which I think can give the Jets. And I know the Jets have played defensively better, but at times they've had trouble stopping the run.
Right.
Listen, Tennessee's got a lot of momentum, but I'll tell you, Miami is sneaky. Miami is sneaky good. And I think what intrigues me about Miami and Tennessee is you got a great comeback story. in Ricky Williams. Mm-hmm. So who would have thunk it? You know, he seemed like he was the bit player in the Wildcat next to Ronnie Brown. You know, almost a relief guy. He's really on the verge of a 1,000-yard season. But what about Chris Johnson?
Yeah.
I mean, how's this for a number? He's run for 100 yards 8 straight games.
Right.
Okay, now he's got a ways to go for the record because the record is 14. He has 1,626 rushing yards, which is more than 22 teams in the league.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty impressive. And if he goes exactly 160 the last three games, each of the last three games, he'll break Eric Dickerson's record 25 years ago, which is 2105 with the L.A. Rams in 1984.
Wow. I mean, you know, this shows you what kind of a record that really was when Dickerson set that, but it also does underscore what Chris Johnson has done. I mean, you're right, the 160 game doesn't sound out of touch for him.
No, not at all, because, you know, in a league which has really been dominated by throwing the football, John, and we've already set a record this year for 300-yard passing games. We got 3 weeks to go. He's one of the few home run. He's the equivalent of DeSean Jackson out of the backfield. I mean, DeSean Jackson for the Eagles, there's no claim. He is Forrest Gump. Every time he gets the ball, you think he's gone. And Chris Johnson, now when he gets through that hole, you are thinking it's an 80, it's a 90, it's a 70-yard touchdown. You don't think that with just about everybody in the league. But he's one of those guys that you give me a crack, and it's goodbye. I mean, he has such acceleration. You know, he's faster. You know, I don't know what the speeds are around the entire league. One of the reasons we know he moved up in the draft last year was because of his speed, because of his 40 time. Is it possible he's even faster than he was a year ago?
Right, right. One of the other games on Sunday is a little bit of a survival matter for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who somehow have found a way to lose five in a row. They're playing at home, though, against the Packers. Are the Steelers already on life support, or are they pretty much done?
Well, I don't think they're done, and I think there's some proud guys on that team, but it just goes to show you mindset. And you know, I from a guy who has watched this league for 40-something years, and listen, there are constants in life. There are death, taxes, and the Pittsburgh Steelers running the football and playing good defense. And they've been doing that since Chuck Noll took over in 1969. We don't do that anymore because they don't run the football. This idea... I guess when I saw that Cleveland game, and I, you know, it's something I've talked about for the last couple of years that they've gotten away from. On a cold, miserable night in Cleveland with the wind blowing, and your quarterback sitting in an empty backfield on 3rd and 1, I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's going to throw the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, getting sacked last week 8 times, as Ben Roethlisberger did. You know, they have lost to the Browns, the Raiders, and the Chiefs. With all due respect to all those teams. And yet here was a team last year that all we said last year is they played in every big game every week. Every game was either in prime time or moved to 4:15 because their schedule was murderous. And yet now they come in and have these quote-unquote lesser teams on their schedule and don't get it done. It's because they've gotten away from what they were.
Right, right.
And that being said, I think this is a team that maybe has a little life in them. The Packers have done a better job protecting Aaron Rodgers as of late, and their defense, it's very interesting about their defense. Of course, they play a 3-4 now. They've seemingly gotten better since Al Harris and Aaron Kampman were no longer on the field. Now, I'm not trying to degrade them, but I think Al Harris maybe was showing little signs of age, and Aaron Kampman, which I thought the Packers made an enormous mistake trying to make him an outside linebacker in a 3-4. And now they have guys who are more suited to playing what they're doing. And, you know, they've done a great job with takeaways. They're, I think, ranked number 2 in yards allowed right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that's feeling its oats a little. But I'm not going to be surprised if the Steelers still show a little heart of a champion. I will say this, if they lay an egg at home against Green Bay, and they play Baltimore at home next week too.
Right.
I think people will be I think Mike Tomlin, who I think I get the feeling is getting ready to make some changes anyway.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be very important for this organization. And I know we're talking about the defending Super Bowl champion, but organization-wise, I think it's very important that the Steelers close with a little fire. Not necessarily all wins, but with a little fire.
Monday night's game, your game on Monday night, Giants at the Redskins. And Redskins have played a little better of late. Vinny Serrato has decided to step down as the head honcho, as a GM, and the Giants are also still playing for their playoff lives.
Yeah, they are. And you want to talk about defense. We talked about, you know, the Steelers' defense. And what happened to the Giants' defense? You know, they score 38 points. You think it's a win, and they gave up 45. Now I know there was a fumble return and a punt return in there as well. But the amount of big plays the Giants have been giving up, especially when they played the Eagles this year, was scary. I mean, even the games they won the last couple weeks, they gave up 31 points to Atlanta. They gave up 24 points to Dallas. They've given up more points than they did all last year. They've given up, I want to say, 40 offensive touchdowns already this year, when it was 31 all of last year. I mean, a lot of things have really gone wrong here. No pass rush. Last week, everybody had trouble holding on the ball, including Eli Manning. And yet the Redskins are finally finding a way to score points. I know a lot of people chalking this up as an automatic for the Giants because they did beat the Redskins earlier this year. But, you know, I think you give the Redskins a little – listen, they have a great chance, the Redskins, to play spoiler in these next couple weeks. They host the Giants and they host the Cowboys. And they know they're not going to the playoffs, but, boy, they would sure like to screw it up for those two rivals.
And they stand a great chance to do it on both ends. Of course, the Patriots playing at the Bills on Sunday afternoon, and the Bills don't have anything to play for. The Patriots are still trying to figure out a way to develop some postseason momentum. I'm one of those, though, unlike some of my counterparts here in Foxborough, that thinks this is going to be a very, very difficult time for the Patriots on Sunday.
Well, I think it will, too. Listen, I mean, you could make a case right now, unfortunately, that defensively, the Patriots are either 3-4 in their own division. Defensively, they are having their issues. Plus, this game is in Buffalo, and I know that sounds odd to say that, but Patriots are 7-0 in New England, and they're 1-0 in England. But they're 0-5 elsewhere. They've lost three straight road games.
0-5 outside of England.
Yes. And by the way, just so I know people how reliable this team was, from 06 to 08 alone, the Patriots were 21-3 on the road.
Yeah.
In the regular season.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
this whole thing is a little bit of an anomaly. Yeah.
Yeah, and listen, I know much has been written about Randy Moss and all those different things, and so I'm not even going to get into that. Defensively, to me, the way they play defense right now, they put a lot of pressure on their offense to respond. And Wes Welker's having a dynamite year and so on, but they've beaten the Buffalo Bills 12 times in a row. And I know there's going to be a lot of fire up there with the Bills fans and so on. Again, these teams playing late in the year who know they're not going anywhere that love to spoil it. But I know the Patriots are not technically the Super Bowl champions, but they are champions as well. They have heart of a champion. These established teams in this league that are having off years, I would never count them out. And let's put it this way. If the Bills somehow do win this game and the Patriots, of course, lose, then there's going to be some real soul-searching going on in New England as we get down the stretch here. But I just don't think the Bills have enough firepower to get that done. I know they gave New England quite the fight in the first game of the season, and they really probably theoretically should have won it then.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe that was their opportunity. And I can somehow just see New England staying comfortably ahead, and then, you know, here comes a touchdown and Buffalo makes it. I think I'm explaining it wrong, but
Buffalo would come close by scoring late. Yeah,
I think New England will always stay two or at least two big plays ahead to outlast them, and they might make Buffalo's offense look pretty darn good. You never know.
Yeah,
but on the other hand, I can't imagine Buffalo, which by the way, gotten real good being opportunistic. 25 interceptions this year.
Yeah, that's
9 by the rookie Jarris Bird.
Pretty good.
Who leads the league. Pretty good. So we obviously be wary of that. But I don't think much of their underneath defense. In fact, neither one of these teams play great underneath defense. So Buffalo attacks more that way. But, you know, if Wes Welker had, you know, 15 catches against the Jets a couple weeks ago, I can't see why he won't have at least 10. Like he did last week.
I think we have to count on it around here, to be honest
with you. Well, it seems that way. It's become a long handoff to Wes Welker.
Yeah, exactly.
And I will also throw this out. I know we're wrapping up here. Is Randy Moss, for whatever's going on there the last couple weeks or last week and so on, you can say he's this, you can say he's that, you can say he's unmotivated. There's at least one person on the Buffalo Bills that I think will always keep Randy Moss motivated, and that's Terrell Owens.
This is true. And you know what? That's the first time. That's the first time somebody's mentioned that this week. I'm glad you did.
And it'll be just very interesting because if Moss has a big game, I'm going to nominate Terrell Owens for Coach of the Week.
I love it.
I know people look at that stuff and say, oh, come on. But you know what? There's a little fraternity that goes on amongst those wide receivers. I know that from my days of working here with Michael Irvin and Sterling Sharp. They all kind of kept an eye on each other,
mm-hmm.
what their numbers were. And these guys are the preeminent guys in terms, now that Marvin Harrison is out of the league, these are the preeminent guys in terms of career touchdown receptions. They will always kind of be watching each other, and I'm sure Randy Moss will. Not that it's the only reason, because I think Randy wants to win. And it's been kind of a rough stretch and so on. But at any one time, he can blow by about anybody in this league.
Yes, we do know that. Russell, thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your spending a couple extra minutes with us today. Have a great weekend, and we're going to talk to you next Tuesday before the holidays. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah, so we can't miss a week. We have Christmas football next week.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, with a very intriguing Chargers-Titans game.
Well, then guess what? We'll get to talk to you on our very next Playbook show. How about that?
You got it.
Back-to-back appearances. Thanks, Russell.
Okay, John.
Talk to you next week. Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL Research Coordinator, with us here inside the Playbook. We'll take the time out. We've got some emails to get to. Still some time for you to contribute to the show. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is our telephone number. Very good point about Terrell Owens.
Strippers is going to be mad at you. Excuse me, pull the B-low. Strippers is going to be mad at you.
Oh, because I didn't ask him about who's better, Bradford or McCoy?
Yep, you didn't ask his question.
He doesn't realize that Russell's a friend of mine, and Russell will say whatever I want him to say. Come on, strippers. You're not that stupid. Come on. You're not that dumb. Get real. Bradford's going to get taken over McCoy. Even I know that, too. So what does he expect that to prove? See, he's got no answer for you, strippers. He's got no answer.
Strippers bought me lunch, so whatever he says goes.
Well, maybe also whatever he says goes for me, too, when he buys me lunch. How's that? Back after this.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in? It
says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Adam Vinatieri
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' three Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
And now, great moments in Patriots playbook history.
Eric, you're outnumbered now. There's another lady in the room.
I know.
Yes.
I absolutely love it.
What's going on?
This is great.
Has this ever happened before?
There's for me?
Like more women than
no. Sadly.
Oh, geez.
That's another great moment inside the playbook.
Oh, poor Eric. Two women and he just didn't know what to do with them. We need more great moments in playbook history, I think, don't we?
Got to make them happen.
Okay, well, did we not have one earlier today? I thought maybe we had one earlier today.
I can't edit live.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. Then you can go back and edit dead, right, as opposed to live. All right, back to the emails. Here we go. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week, Trey the Veal. This one comes.
Later.
Yeah. Zachary says, everyone always wants their boss to like them, but Bill Belichick doesn't focus on trying to be the player's best friend. He focuses on talent development and winning, and when push comes to shove, can Asante Samuel honestly say that he was not a better cornerback after playing for Bill Belichick than he was before? Well, let's face it, Zach. I mean, you know, Belichick gave him the opportunity to be a better player after than before. But you could say the same perhaps for any coach in the NFL if some other team had drafted him. I mean, automatically, if you spent a few years in the NFL, you'd like to think that you're going to be a better player than you were coming out of college, right? Belichick makes players better than they were. I went to Michigan, watched Brady in college. No doubt he was a great quarterback, but it was the tutelage of Bill Belichick that brought him to the Hall of Fame level he is now at. The best bosses make their employees better than they are. I would rather have a coach do that than have the players rave about how great a guy he is. All right, I think your intent is fine there, Zach, but I would also tell you that, you know, I think anyone, unless a coach is completely out of, you know, touch with reality, any coach in the NFL is going to make a player, if the player will subscribe to his theories, going to make that player better simply by being there and being an older and being a more experienced player. Some coaches obviously, clearly do it better than others. Maybe Belichick is one of those. But, you know, I think you have to realize that just about any professional coach worth his salt, and you'd have to say that, you know, 32 coaches in the NFL, some are clearly better than others, but, hey, they're in their jobs for a reason, because someone believes they can do it at a very high level. Their job is to make those players better around them. Sam in Chicago chips in, and she says, thank you, Patriots, for being 8-5 and still in it to win it. Do you think we're back to a Bledsoe era where the Patriots will always be a general 8-5 team this time of year with the potential of a string of great or horrible games? For Drew's later years, during his 1993 to 2001 tenure in Foxborough, I always felt like the Pats could play with the best of them at times and then self-implode during other stretches of the season. Do you really think Belichick and Brady are large enough anchors to keep this team on more of a consistent keel? That's a very, very good question. Actually, now that I sit here and I think about it, because I hadn't really ever considered it that way, Sam, but now that I think about it, I kind of agree with you to the point where I think the team is sort of back to that Bledsoe-era way of what transpires, that, yes, they can compete with just about anybody on any given day out on the field, but they're also going to have a stretch at some point where, for an inexplicable reason, they're going to be bad, or they're going to blow one. They're going to turn it over. They're going to beat it. They're going to lose to a team they should beat. And all of that has happened this year. Now, it's hard to say whether or not that'll be a trend, because obviously you really can't call one season like this one a trend.
But if they come back next year, and let's say they throw up another 11-5 or 10-6, well, then you'd have to say that, okay, now maybe a trend is beginning. We've already made the point that this team is a team in transition. This team is not the elite team that it was 2 years ago. You could even argue that the transition began slowly when the Giants won the Super Bowl game, just because the Patriots only scored 14 points that day. And then it was, of course, hastened somewhat by Brady's injury last year. Matt Castle had an extraordinary year, but, you know, while taking nothing away from what Matt did last year, I happen to think that last year's team might have been a little bit better around him than this year's team is around Brady. And I say that in all honesty. That doesn't mean that this year's team is horrible. It means it's a different team that needs a chance to grow, because this team did get younger and less experienced on the defensive side of the ball. And we're seeing that this year's team is paying the price for those moves. So let's get a more accurate answer to your thought here, Sam, this time next year. I'd hate to say that, you know, we're back to that Bledsoe era way of thinking or performing, but then again, it does kind of ring a bell, doesn't it? She also says, to all those Colts fans that sat around me during the Pats game in Indy with those F New England towns, let's go Saints, and hopefully the Pats. Very good. Sorry you had to subject yourself to that. Something tells me, Sam, you can take care of yourself. Lawrence in Oregon. Sort MVP candidates. Contender or pretender? Peyton Manning. Contender. Drew Brees. Contender. Chris Johnson. He's had a great individual year, but I'm going to say pretender just because of the team's fortunes, unless somehow they get into the playoffs. Elvis Dumervil. Same. Although Denver will probably be there, but I don't know if he's MVP caliber. Charles Woodson, Jared Allen, Darren Sharper, Brandon Marshall, Phillip Rivers, DeSean Jackson. Out of that group of players, Rivers, to me, would probably have the one legitimate claim to being contender rather than pretender for MVP. Maybe DeSean Jackson. Maybe. But again, it depends on Philly. And he says, and for the Puerto Rico fans, Wes Welker. I'm not sure I understand that, but okay. Welker, MVP, if the Patriots are able to do damage, you know, here toward the end, and Welker ends up, say, with 140 catches, yeah, I think you'd have to throw him in there. Anything short of that, you know, the focal point's going to go around the quarterback. As bad as Heisman winners usually are, he says, and comments on the 97 winner Woodson and runner-up Manning still playing MVP-level play 12 years later. That was a pretty good year in 97, wasn't it? Pretty good year, Lawrence. No disagreements there. All right, Antavi sends his crystal ball. This is interesting. Fellas, no worries. I'm breaking out my crystal ball. And he says the Patriots will win their next 7 games. W's in the last 3 remaining regular season games. So that means winning at Buffalo, winning at home against Jacksonville, and winning at Houston. That's going to be a challenge into itself. But he says, okay, we're going to do that. And then W's in their last 3 remaining regular season games then. Wild card weekend, he says, Pats 20, Ravens 10. So you got him going against the Ravens. So I'm assuming then you believe that the Patriots will end up with the 3 seed and will play the 6 seed Baltimore in the wild card. That seems to be the way that you would explain this. AFC division game, Pats 21, Colts 20, playing at Indy again. And then the AFC championship game, Pats 31, Chargers 23, playing at San Diego. And then the Super Bowl, he's got Pats 29, Saints 27. Somebody has made the Kool-Aid in his household, haven't they? But it's always good to have a little bit of a positive attitude going here, right? I would agree with that. All right, Paul says, if you didn't know, they were talking about the Patriots, and you heard the team had Buffalo, Jacksonville, and Houston left to play. And the outcome of all those games were in question. Would you think you were talking about a playoff team?
or a team that was better than one and out in the playoffs? That's an interesting consideration. Would you think you were talking about a playoff team or a team that was better than one and done in the playoffs? Well, I guess you'd have to assume then, so I'm trying to consider this, Paul. I guess you'd have to assume you're talking about a playoff team that has Buffalo, Jacksonville, and Houston still left on the schedule. And if you're talking about a playoff team, then you have to say, well, then it looks like that playoff team should be favored to beat Buffalo, Jacksonville, and Houston because none of those three teams are currently in the playoffs, although Jacksonville is likely to be there, more so than the other two teams. I don't know that a team being better than one and done in the playoffs comes into question here, but I would say that you're probably, if you're looking at a playoff team that has those three teams left on the schedule, you're probably saying at least a saying a playoff team is there and a team that's certainly capable of winning more than one in the playoffs. I think that's what you mean by that particular email. Brett in Orlando says, I am so tired of everyone blaming the defense on this team for everything. Here's the deal. The 07 Pats allowed 17 points per game. And this team has only allowed one more. That's 18 points per game. This team might be younger and less experienced, but in terms of points on the field, which is the only thing that really matters, they're basically equal. The difference is the offense. They are scoring almost 12 less points per game this season than in 07. All but one of their losses was within one score. So they had a chance to win, and New Orleans had the best game in team history. The problem with this team is simply that the offense is not making plays in crunch time. I still think, though, that this team can beat anyone on any given Sunday. All right, Brett, good email. Let's attack it here for a moment. And not in a negative sense, but let's attack it for a moment. Okay. 07 Pats, 17 points per game. You're about right. I think it was 16 point something, something, something. This year's team is right at about 17 and change, so 18 points per game. You're right. Technically speaking, this defense has only given up one more point per game than the 07 Super Bowl team. So that doesn't seem like a lot. I understand how you could come to your conclusion, but you probably have to get a good close look at this team and where this team's shortcomings are to realize that the tendency to be worse than giving up 18 points per game is there every week. They gave up 22 to Miami. They obviously played better last week against Carolina, much better, giving up only 10. They gave up 38 to the Saints, yes, and you already admitted Saints may have played their best game arguably ever. I don't know about that, but the Saints certainly played well that night, and they were certainly motivated to be there. They gave up 35 at the Colts, and again, the Colts, you know, for whatever reason, the Patriots just, you know, hit a bump in that fourth quarter, and the Colts obviously have a very good offense, you know, and it all revolves around Manning. But you did give up those, you know, two big game performances there. Other than that, they've been respectable defensively. And you're right, one on average, one more point per game worse than what they were in 2007. So if you're looking at it from a strict statistical point of view, hard to argue with what you're saying. But you have to have, again, seen this team play to know that, you know, early in the year they couldn't stop the run. Now they're adequate against the run, but they're having trouble, you know, in the defensive backfield. A lot of that is because they're unable to put a consistent pass rush on the opposing quarterback. If the defense needed to correct one thing, in my mind, it would be to get pressure on the passer. I think Lee Bodden is capable. I think Sean Springs is capable. I think Darius Butler is learning to be capable. I don't know about Jonathan Wilhite. I think the safeties are capable. I think that they become better. Everybody in the backfield becomes better when there's pressure up front because it forces the quarterback to make quicker decisions. That's where I think this defense, it has its shortcoming. Giving up one more point per game than 07, sure. But unless there's a pass rush, considering what you have on down the line in the playoffs and your quarterbacks that you could face would be, oh, I don't know, Phillip Rivers, Peyton Manning, and Drew Brees in that order. You're not going to get to Brees. You're going to get sliced and diced. As far as the offense is concerned, I think you're absolutely right. This team isn't making plays in crunch time. They're not scoring touchdowns, for the most part, in the red zone. They're inconsistent at best in the red zone, and that has been a season-long problem. If you figure out a way over these last 3 weeks to get more consistent and score touchdowns in the red zone, then, frankly, Brett, I think you're right on. I think that this team can beat anyone on any given Sunday. And may will. And they may do that. They might just do that. But the red zone, crunch time, you know, short yardage situations, those have been crucial all year. And I think the reason that they've had the spate of unsuccess or lack of success, if you will, is because there's been sometimes a lack of imagination in the play calling. And they've become too predictable, and teams figure, well, if this isn't coming, then this is. And so they're gambling a little bit, and they're gambling right. There has to be something in the red zone that's called that shakes things up, or there has to be something in a short yardage situation, whether it's third and short or fourth and short, that changes things up that's not the same. Whether it's an over-the-middle pass, whether it's finding the tight end, whether it's an end-around run with Welker, something, somehow, some way. Hey, let's go back to Tom Brady sneaking it up the middle. I realize he's banged up, but all Tom has to do is lean forward and he can pick up 2 yards. And we've seen that time and time again. That was one of the staples of the Patriots offense, you know, in the heyday, you know, 2-3 years ago, that nobody could seem to stop was the simple QB sneak. Maybe Brady's injuries are keeping him from doing that, but that is as effective as anything. This team must find a way to coordinate better in the red zone and in short yardage situations, even outside of the red zone. If they can do that, then you're going to make all things better. That, above all, is really, I think Brett does a good job with recognizing that here in the email. That, above all, really, if you could figure out a way to be more consistent in the red zone and getting 6 as opposed to 3, I think you probably find a way that this team wins at least 2 of the 5 games they have lost to this point in time. And this team probably finds a way to win these last 3, which, in my opinion, is almost imperative if you want to be thought of as a potential contender. You know, this team can go 11-5 and win these last 3. They go in as certainly, you know, no worse than the 4 seed. Certainly looked like they could get a 3 seed. Doesn't really matter because you're going to have to play on wild card weekend. Might matter in terms of who you'd face in the opening round of the playoffs, but then you'd have a couple of road wins under your belt. And I think we're all unanimous, whether you're a fan or a media person or whatever, we're all unanimous in the fact that a true championship contending team needs to have shown and be capable of winning on the road. And the Patriots would have, you know, well, they would have, what, 2 straight road wins, and that would certainly give them a little bit of momentum going into the playoffs. And it's pretty clear, outside of the first game, if they're going to get to the Super Bowl, they've got to win 2 on the road. So it's there for you. Got to find a way to win 2 on the road. B-Lo, what's happening?
John, how you doing?
I'm good.
Good. You think they can win two on the road?
Well, I think it'll be tough this weekend.
Yeah.
I think it'll be close this weekend. If they do win this weekend, depending upon, I still have to, I've said this now probably since mid-season here, that I've kind of reserved judgment on that last game against Houston because I want to see whether or not it means anything for the Texans.
Yeah, well, that kind of, you know, whether or not it means anything for either team. I mean, there's
a true
chance.
We could be locked into, say, the 4 spot, exactly. And there's really nothing we can do, and so right. You're going to take the time to rest the guys that you have.
Right. There's, you know, the Texans could be eliminated. I don't think there's any scenario where they could have clinched a playoff spot by then, but they could be eliminated. Should I put the headphones on?
Yeah, you need.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
I think
I don't know what he.
Is,
oh,
there, is
you
he,
don't
is
get
he referring
it.
To your?
Yes, of course he is.
Coughing spate last 1 week last
ago,
week?
Right around this time. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
Yeah. That was pleasant for all involved. pleasant for everybody.
That was a great moment in fantasy lowdown history.
Yeah.
The only moment in front. I got a bottle of water right here for
nice,
you.
Nice, nice.
Which I had last week, too. It didn't really work.
Didn't work, no.
I mean, that game could go in a lot of different directions based on, you know, put it this way. If it means something for both teams, and by something, if it means playoffs on the line, I mean, the Patriots could have clinched a playoff spot, but division, wild card, 3-4. If it means a lot for both teams, scary game.
Yeah.
Scary game. And I think the Patriots are through blowing teams out. I don't see any of these three games on their schedule being blowouts, and I don't think any matchup in the playoffs would be a blowout. I think they'll win ugly in a lot of these games if they win. That's just the way this team is. Tom Brady said it himself after the game last week. They're a grinded-out team. And that's, you know, a team with Tom Brady, Randy Moss, Wes Welker, you don't think of it in that term, but they're a grinded-out team.
Right. What's coming up on Fantasy Lowdown, my man?
Actually, we're going to talk a little bit about Randy Moss. Got an unfortunate email from someone who lost his
great cash, homie.
Lost his spot for the playoffs last week by percentage points.
Ow.
And and Randy Moss had negative points in his in probably most leagues. So, going to talk about Randy Moss, and if you've got Randy Moss on your team coming up this week, do you start him? Where do you go from there? Wow. A lot of playoff questions, a lot of people in fantasy playoffs, and a lot of stardom sit-ems. Got some people from around the building who are involved in fantasy that we've had on over the course of the season.
A lot of questions in the hopper.
A lot of questions already in there. So yeah. I've got all my notes, going to try to answer these as best we can. And I take some credit here because a lot of the people who emailed today have emailed over the course of the season. And if you're emailing me with stardom or sit-em questions today, that means you're in the playoffs. Why are you in the playoffs? Advice from me,
John. Oh,
right.
Let's give ourselves a pat on the back. Yeah,
I'm not the brightest guy in the world. Maybe I am, Jason. No, it's
yeah. You were great for me, B-Law.
Well, we were competitors, Jason. So for you going 2-14 or whatever, that was me doing my job. Downgrading your guys. So no, I don't mean to take credit like that. But this is the playoffs, and if you've got stardom sim questions, you know, send your emails in over the next hour. I got a lot to get to, a lot to cover, a lot of rankings, and a lot of matchups to look into.
All right, we'll let you get to it.
All righty.
Coming up in the Fantasy Lowdown in just a moment. Thanks to Dan Dierdorf from CBS Sports and Russell Baxter from ESPN for joining us in the playbook today. Next week, we're back on Tuesday. We have a short week next week and the following week because of the holidays. So Tuesday, Wednesday next week in the playbook, and then Tuesday, Wednesday the following week in the playbook as well before the New Year's holiday. So we'll be cramming three shows worth of information into two shows over the next 2 weeks. How's that sound? Does that
better
work
bring
you?
Your water.
Yeah, bring your water because we'll have a lot of words to get out. Pats at Buffalo this weekend. Until next Tuesday. So long, everybody.